recordings are in the public domain. For more information, and to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Frank Woodley. Country of the Pointed Birds by Sarah Orne Jewett. Chapter 6, The Waiting Place. How did you manage with the rest of that rough voyage on the Minerva? I asked. I shall be glad to explain to you, said Captain Littlepage, forgetting his grievances for the moment. If I had a map at hand, I could explain better. We were driven to and fro, way up toward what we used to call Parry's Discoveries, and lost our bearings. It was thick and foggy, and at last I lost my ship. She drove on a rock, and we managed to get ashore on what I took to be a barren island, the few of us that were left alive. When she first struck, the sea was somewhat calmer than it had been, and most of the crew, against orders, manned the longboat and put off in a hurry, and were never heard of more. Our own boat upset, but the carpenter kept himself and me above water, and we drifted in. I had no strength to call upon after my recent fever, and laid down to die. But he found the tracks of a man and dog the second day, and got along the shore to one of those far missionary stations that the Moravians support. They were very poor themselves and in distress. It wasn't useless to us. There were but few Eskimo left in that region. There we remained for some time, and I became acquainted with strange events. The captain lifted his head and gave me a questioning glance. I could not help noticing that the dull look in his eyes had gone, and there was instead a clear intentness that made them seem dark and piercing. There was a supply ship expected, and the pastor, an excellent Christian man, made no doubt that we should get passage in her. He was hoping that orders would come to break up the station, but everything was uncertain, and we got on the best we could for a while. We fished and helped the people in other ways. There was no other way of paying our debts. I was taken to the pastor's house until I got better. But they were crowded, and I felt myself in the way and made excuse to join with an old seaman, a Scotchman, who had built him a warm cabin and had room in it for another. He was looked upon with regard and had stood by the pastor in some troubles with the people. He had been on one of those English exploring parties that found one end of the road to the North Pole but never could find the other. We lived like dogs in a kennel, or so you thought if you had seen the hut from the outside. But the main thing was to keep warm. There were piles of bird skins to lie on, and he'd made him a good bunk, and there was another for me. It was dreadful dreary waiting there. We begun to think the steep supply steamer was lost, and my poor ship broke up and strewed herself all along the shore. We got to watching on the headlands. My men and me knew the people were short of supplies and had to pinch themselves. It ought to read in the Bible, "Man cannot live by fish alone." If they told the truth of things, 'tain't bread that wears the worst on you. First part of the time, old Gaffett, that I lived with, seemed speechless, and I didn't know what to make of him, nor he of me, I dare say. But as we got acquainted, I found he'd been through more disasters than I had, and had troubles that wasn't going to let him live a great while. It used to ease his mind to talk to an understanding person, so we used to sit and talk together all day. I'd got a bad blow on the back of my head at the time we came ashore, and it pained me at times, and my strength was broken anyway. I've never been so able since. Captain Littlepage fell into a reverie. Then I had the good of my reading, he explained presently. I had no books. The pastor spoke but little English, and all his books were foreign. But I used to say over all I could remember. The old poets little knew what comfort they could be to a man. I was well acquainted with the works of Milton, but up there it did seem to me as if Shakespeare was the king. He has the sea terms very accurate, and some beautiful passages were calming to the mind. I could say them over until I shed tears. There was nothing beautiful to me in that place but the stars above and those passages of verse. Gaffett was always brooding and brooding and talking to himself. He was afraid he should never get away, and it preyed on his mind. He thought when I got home, I could interest the scientific men in his discovery. But they're all taken up with their own notions. Some didn't even take pains to answer the letters I wrote. You observe that I said this crippled man Gaffett had been shipped on a voyage of discovery. I now tell you that the ship was lost on its return, and only Gaffett and two officers were saved off the Greenland coast. And he had knowledge later that those men never got back to England. The brig they shipped on was run down in the night, so no other living soul had the facts, and he gave them to me. There is a strange sort of country way up north beyond the ice, and strange folks living there. Gaffett believed it was the next world for this. What do you mean, Captain Little Page? I exclaimed. The old man was bending forward and whispering. He looked over his shoulder before he spoke the last sentence. To hear old Gaffett tell about it was something awful, said, going on with his story quite steadily after the moment of excitement had passed. 'Twas first a tale of dogs and sledges and cold and wind and snow. Then they begun to find the ice grow rotten. They had been frozen in and got into a current flowing north, far up beyond Fox Channel. And they took to their boats when the ship got crushed, and this warm current took them out of sight of the ice and into a great open sea. And they still followed it due north, just the very way they had planned to go. Then they struck a coast that wasn't laid down or charted. But the cliffs were such that no boat could land until they found a bay and struck across under sail to the other side where the shore looked lower. They were scant of provisions and out of water, but they got sight of something that looked like a great town. "For God's sake, Gaffett," said I the first time he told me, "you don't mean a town 2 degrees farther north than ships had ever been?" But he'd got their course marked on an old chart that he'd pieced out at the top. But he insisted upon it, and told it over and over again, to be sure I had it straight to carry to those who would be interested. There was no snow and ice, he said, after they had sailed some days with that warm current, which seemed to come right from under the ice they'd been pinched up in, and had been crossing on foot for weeks. "But what about the town?" I asked. "Did they get to the town?" "They did," said the captain, "and found inhabitants. 'Twas an awful condition of things. It appeared, as near as Gaffett could express it, like a place where there was neither living nor dead. They could see the place where they were approaching it by sea, pretty near like any town, and thick with habitations. But all at once, they lost sight of it altogether. And when they got close inshore, they could see the shapes of folks. But they never could get near them, all blowing gray figures that would pass along alone or sometimes gathered in companies as if they were watching. The men were frightened at first, but the shapes never came near them. It was as if they blew back, and at last they all got bold and went ashore, and found birds' eggs and sea fowl, like any wild northern spot where creatures were tame and folks had never been when there was good water. Gaffett said that he and another man came nearer one of the fog-shaped men that was going along slow with the look of a pack on his back among the rocks, and they chased him. But Lord, he flitted away out of sight like a leaf the wind takes with it, or a piece of cobweb. They would make as if they talked together. There was no sound of they acted as if they didn't see us, but only felt us coming toward them, says Gaffett one day, trying to tell the particulars. They couldn't see the town when they went ashore. One day, the captain and the doctor were gone till night up across the high land where the town had seemed to be. And they came back at night, beat out and white as ashes, and wrote all next day in their notebooks, and whispered together, full of excitement. And they were sharp-spoken with the men when they offered to ask any questions. Then there came a day, said Captain Gaffett, leaning toward me with a strange look in his eyes, and whispered, early in the morning gave the alarm, and they all put off in the boat and got a little way out to sea. Those folks, or whatever they were, come about them like bats. All at once they raised incessant armies and come as if to drive them back to sea. They stood thick at the edge of the water like the ridges of grim war. No thought of life, none of retreat. Sometimes a standing fight, then soaring on main wing, tormented all the air. And when they'd gone, got the boat out of reach of danger, Gaffett said they looked back. And there was the town again, standing up just as they'd seen it first, coming on the coast. Say what you might, they all believed 'twas a kind of waiting place between this world and the next. The captain had sprung to his feet in excitement and made excited gestures, but he still whispered huskily. "Sit down, sir," I said, as quietly as I could, and he sank into his chair, quite spent. Gaffett thought the officers were hurrying home to report and to fit out a new expedition when they were all lost. At the time, the men got orders not to talk over what they had seen, the old man explained presently, in a more natural tone. Weren't they all starving? And wasn't it a mirage or something of that sort? I ventured to ask, but he looked at me blankly. Gaffett had got so that his mind ran on nothing else, he went on. The ship's surgeon let fall an opinion to the captain one day that 'twas some condition of the light and the magnetic currents that let them see those folks. 'Twasn't a right feeling part of the world, anyway. They had to battle with the compass to make it serve, and everything seemed to go wrong. Gaffett had worked it out in his own mind that they was all common ghosts, but the conditions were unusual favorable for seeing them. He was always talking about the Geographical Society, but he never took proper steps, as I viewed it now, and stayed right there at the mission. He was a good deal crippled and thought they'd confine him in some jail of a hospital. He said he was waiting to find the right men to tell, somebody bound north. Once in a while, they stopped there to leave a mail or something. He was setting his notions and let two or three proper exploring expeditions go by because he didn't like their looks. But when I was there, he had got restless, fearing he might be taken away or something. He had all his directions written out straight as a string to give the right ones. I wanted him to trust me, so I might have something to show, but he wouldn't. I suppose he's dead now. I wrote to him, and I done all I could. 'Twill be a great exploit some of these days. I assented, absent-mindedly, thinking more just then of my companion's alert, determined look, and the seafaring, ready aspect that had come to his face. But at this moment there fell a sudden change, and the old, pathetic, scholarly look returned. Behind me hung a map of North America, and I saw, as I turned a little, that his eyes were fixed upon the northernmost regions, and their careful, recent outlines, with a look